Right now, all our money is in banks. In the future, all our money is going to be on-chain. This may sound obvious, but to most of the world, it's not. And even if it was obvious, it's boring. But while the rest of the world sleeps on crypto, the boring stuff is changing our financial system forever. And this is super bullish for everyone listening to this podcast. GMGM, welcome to Milk Road Radio, the easiest path to get smarter about crypto. I'm Jay Bird, along with my co-host Kyle Reedhead, and we believe that crypto is going to change the world. Now, before we get into today's episode, this is super exciting. As you've probably noticed, we are no longer Web3 Academy. We are now Milk Road Radio. Our mission has not changed. From the beginning, 2 years ago when we started this, our aim is to guide you, our listeners, and our readers towards understanding this on-chain world that is in constant transformation. Now, in today's episode, we've got many exciting things to go through. Kai, what is on the docket for today?
Yeah, it's going to be another amazing episode, and pumped to be doing this under the new brand of Milk Road. Some of you might have already seen this through our newsletter and Twitter where we've announced it, but this will be the first episode on the podcast where we come at you with our new branding. We have merged with Milk Road, and for those of you looking for more on the story, we've got too much news, so we're not going to actually dive too far into this story today, but we have a special episode coming up next week where we'll give you all the in-depth details of what's going on here. But for now, all you need to know is that Web3 Academy is merging with Milk Road. And so all the beloved content that you usually get from Web3 Academy, whether it be the newsletter, whether you follow us on Twitter or the podcast, you'll still get all of it and more. It's just going to be branded with a milkman, which is super fun. So that's get you up on a speed. In terms of news in the crypto industry, so much going on. There's $1 billion tokenized in treasuries on chain today. We just surpassed $1 billion. Just the other day. And that happened, of course, because of BlackRock and its new platform called Biddle. So we'll cover that story. Coinbase is moving its assets, both its treasury and its customers' assets on chain. So we'll talk about what's going on there. And then L2s are lighting up, specifically Base, which is just printing money right now. We'll talk about all this story going on there. We've been following this one for a few weeks since the EIP 4844 upgrade. Some craziness going on over in that world. We've got an exploit happening over on Blast. We've got meme coins still going crazy. Someone in Indonesia making, what was it, millions? Jay's going to tell that story because it's a wild one. And the new Super Intelligence Alliance. A couple big crypto AI companies are merging together to become one of the biggest decentralized AI companies or platforms in the world. So lots of big things happening today, Jay.
Man, super exciting. Exciting for so many reasons. Milk Road Radio, super stoked to get going on this. But also exciting because we have a special offer right now for our listeners and the readers of our newsletter as part of this new launch of Web3 Academy merging with Milk Road. Kai, what is this exciting offer?
Yeah, this is for Milk Road Pro. So for those who are already signed up to Milk Road Pro, by the way, you'll continue to get your pro reports. They're just going to be in the form of Milk Road. And there's going to be much more coming to this subscription or membership now. So have a look. They'll be coming out on Saturdays instead of Thursdays now from Milk Road instead of from Web3 Academy. For those that are not yet pro, this is your opportunity to go pro. And this is the best time to do it. So for those that don't know, Pro is our crypto research and analysis subscription that we have. It's a paid product. And it's made to make research and analysis, things that are usually quite confusing, make it very easy for investors to read. It's one of the best research products that I think are on the market for crypto right now. You currently get one weekly report that is either about tokenomic deep dive, so token analysis, sector analysis, market analysis, or investment strategy. There's, I think, 70 past reports that you can review right now that help you become a better investor in this space. We're also coming out with a new where are we at in the cycle indicator, a weekly update with a bunch of charts to let you know where we're at in terms of the cycle, when you should be selling, when you should be buying. And then also you get access to the pro community in our Discord. And this is right now 33% off for the first 500 people who sign up to Milk Road Pro. The link is in the show notes below, so make sure you go do that. If you are the first 500, remember, this is going out to all of Milk Road, where there's about 300,000 of us now. And so this will end quickly, but if you want 33% off for life, not just for right now, but for life, you can do that right now if you're part of the first 500. 500. So click the show notes there, the link in the show notes, and go pro today.
Yeah, I think I just got to say, having been a subscriber myself from the beginning of when we first launched what was previously Web3 Academy Pro, this is a product that anybody that is investing in crypto needs, because this is the weekly report that gives you a not only like an analysis of what's happening with your investment, but also a macro big picture understanding that allows you to make decisions around when to buy and when to sell, which is always the hardest things to do in these bull markets, is to know, should you still be buying on the way up? Are we still going up further? And when should you be taking profits and getting out? And that's a decision that you need help with. And Milk Road Pro, the milkman, the pro milkman, is going to make sure that you get your profits or you get your milk. I don't know what the line is going to be for us, but something like that. So make sure you guys sign up. Link again is in the show notes.
By the way, we're creating a ton of memes and new language for our podcast and memes on Twitter all around the milkman. And so our team is going to come up with a bunch, but please help us. We are new here. This is our first day under Milk Road branding. So we're going to need some help from the community. I know many of you guys are already Milk Road subscribers, so you might have some good ideas. Please share on Twitter. That would be absolutely amazing. All right, Jay, let's get into some of the news here. We're going to start things off with MarketWatch as per usual. And Bitcoin currently sitting at $71,000 today. It is up 2.74% on the day, up 5% on the week. It's been just kind of up and down for the last little bit here. The pullback that we had kind of maxed out at about 15%, and it looks like we aren't going to go any further, and we're now back up. We talked about that last week. So all things good, but not super bullish for me at this point in time. I think we're going to probably chop around for a little bit, but that's just my guess. I'll talk more about why I think that in a second. But that's Bitcoin. Let's move on to Ethereum, currently sitting at $3,580. It is up 2.3% of the day and 1.8% of the week. So Bitcoin outperforming a little bit here as people are debating if the ETH ETFs are going to get approved. So we'll continue to see what happens there. And then Solana, the last one on the list, is currently sitting at $187. And it is up 77% of the day, down 2.15%. Bitcoin continues to be the leader deeper into this cycle. Pretty wild. Actually, the Pro Report coming out this week, Jay, is a discussion around, is Bitcoin just going to lead this entire cycle? Does the ETFs change everything and Bitcoin dominance just continue to go up and up? It is a full breakdown of the bull case for Bitcoin, and also some thoughts around, will Bitcoin just continue to lead and dominate because of the ETFs and all the flows coming its way? Interesting Pro Report to read and understand how this cycle is likely going to play out.
And so I got to subscribe to get that on Saturday.
You do. You got to do that.
You can show notes for the discount.
It is. And guess what? If you're the first 500, you're going to get a 33% discount. But Jay, you said you're already subscribed.
Oh yeah, I am already. Okay, I'm going to unsubscribe and then resubscribe to get that discount for life.
The crypto market cap, the total market cap, is currently $2.587 trillion. Which is actually quite near the very, very top. It's interesting. Obviously, Bitcoin and ETH going up to the biggest part of this market cap. That's what's going to lead it to all-time highs. But the more airdrops we get, the more that adds to this market cap. So maybe Bitcoin and ETH can just continue to chop, and we just keep dropping new tokens, printing new money into the crypto world, and this market cap will reach all-time highs just from that. We'll see what happens, how that goes. Regardless, though, Jay, this was a nice tweet that I just saw that I wanted to start the Market Watch episode with, which was Raul Paul, who just says, "We are in the midst of the greatest macro trade of all time. Don't mid-curve it." Basically saying there's a lot of people that still don't get crypto. Well, there's two points here. A lot of people that are like, no, this thing doesn't make sense. Why is it going up so much? Are we really having another cycle? Doesn't make sense. And that's mid-curving it, just sort of trying to think too deeply into what this thing is. But if you look at this chart here, it's basically comparing Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, and then the NASDAQ and real estate and treasuries and bonds and gold and basically every other asset. And if you look year over year, crypto just absolutely dominates every single year, except for in its bull markets where it gets completely wrecked. But that's okay because it dominates so much in its other years. It's pretty nuts. Just in the last 2 years, Bitcoin up 155% and then 45% so far this year. Ethereum 91%, 48% this year. Solana 922% last year, 16% so far this year. Nothing even comes close. The NASDAQ had 54% last year, so like pretty respectable. Nothing else is like even above 20% other than US large caps, which is basically the NASDAQ. So there's no point to put your money in anything other than crypto at this point, because this is just, it is the macro trade of the year or of the decade without a doubt. So just a nice realization when you look at that chart to see what's going on here. But Jay, let's dive into Bitcoin a little bit. ETFs have had a bit of outflows over the last week, which is why, or in part why we had that pullback. But thankfully, over the last just couple of days here, so this week, we have made it back into the positives. We are once again getting positive inflows. Not massive numbers like we had 2 weeks ago, but still not so shabby. Can't complain about a couple hundred million coming in on a daily basis into Bitcoin. So we are back up on that. No buys from Michael Saylor over the last week either, which is maybe a little bit strange. However, there is some random wallet. We talked about this one a while ago. They're calling it Mr. 100. This is some, I don't know if it's an institution. We don't know if it's a person. We just know this person has a lot of money because they're buying 100 Bitcoin basically every day, sometimes even more than every day. They currently own. So they've been doing this for months and months and months. They've just been buying and buying 100 Bitcoin at a time. Every time they make a purchase, it is 100 Bitcoin, regardless of the price. It's quite odd. And anyway, they've accumulated 55,700 Bitcoin. And just last week, in 24 hours, they did 18 buys of 100 Bitcoin. So whoever this is just next level bidding on Bitcoin right now. They've become the 13th largest Bitcoin holder. They just don't stop. Every day you wake up, you can look on chain. This wallet just keeps buying. We don't know who it is. There's some speculation from Arkham or Akram, whatever that research analyst protocol or whatever they are. I think it's called Upbit or something. I think that might be an exchange. I don't know. We don't know who it is for sure. But either way, someone's still bidding. So that's good. Even if Michael Saylor decides to take a break, which I really don't think he will. But nice to see. Nice that we can track that, eh?
So nice to see. And so not a surprise either. Like, we're still so early for the large, you know, government sovereign wealth funds, institutions are going to be coming in and buying Bitcoin. And so get ready to see more of that in the coming, I think, in the coming months and throughout the rest of this cycle.
Oh, absolutely. Now, the reason why I think markets are kind of cooling off right now, and it doesn't mean we're going to go down on this crazy pullback or anything like that. I just think the reason that they're sort of cooling off right now is this is Ethereum ETFs. We just don't know what's going to happen. Markets don't like uncertainty. Obviously, getting this approval would be super bullish for the crypto world, because once we get this, it's sort of like Bitcoin was one that was great, but Bitcoin doesn't really impact. It does, but not to a full extent impact the rest of crypto, right? Because there's no smart contracts really on Bitcoin. Doesn't have a bunch of other tokens. Once Ethereum gets this approval, it's like, it's just lights on for everything, right? It's like, okay, smart contract platforms, this is like legit. And so it's going to be just nuts for Ethereum and all the tokens on Ethereum. It's going to be nuts for Solana and all the other ecosystems. Bitcoin, like, obviously it matters for crypto at large. It's just a little bit of a different asset. So we're still waiting to see what happens there. And so I think the markets don't know what to do until we get this approval. Though, one other thing is we do have the halving occurring in the next month. So that's coming in April. It's actually less than a month now. So there's just a lot of mixed emotions, I think, in the space. And so generally this means we chop. We go up, we go down. I don't think we're necessarily going to have a crazy leg up just yet. If those ETFs get approved, then absolutely. On the news of the ETFs, we talked a bunch about how people don't think it's going to happen anymore. The chief legal officer of Grayscale, he came out just the other day and he put his thoughts down on what's going on with the spot ETF approvals. And most people are saying that it's not going to get approved because there just hasn't been any comments on any of the applications so far. Whereas with Bitcoin, it was like back and forth for weeks and weeks. And it was like nonstop. Every day we had new news and there's just been nothing. It's been crickets. What Craig, the chief legal officer of Grayscale, says is, you know what? I actually think that this isn't a bad thing. I think the reason that there's no comments is because we figured out all the ins and outs for Bitcoin. And Ethereum is basically the exact same. There is no difference. The only difference would be the staking aspect, which probably doesn't get approved anyway. So they probably just approve this thing to be the exact same as how they did with Bitcoin, which means there is no feedback needed. They already know what they're doing. Coinbase takes care of the custody of it all. They understand if it's in kind and how it all works. So, like, there's just not a lot to discuss is what his theory is. So he actually thinks that this is completely fine and thinks he's still very positive that this approval will go through. So interesting for those of us to come out. Bunch of people got pretty excited about that because they haven't really said anything. And Grayscale is one of the leaders in this. Although the Bloomberg boys, Eric Balcunas, came back and said, hey, well, that may be true. And that's cool that you think that. We still are keeping it only at 25% odds. So still not looking good from the Bloomberg boys side of things. But Again, that's just one person. We have no idea what's really going to happen there. Although one other interesting thing. So there's the no comments from the SEC that people are worried about. And then there's this whole SEC, you know, wagering a campaign against Ethereum as a security. A lot of, you know, big people in the space have come out saying, look, it's not a security. There's tons of reasons to believe it's not. Ether futures ETF is already approved, etc. But what happened this week was the U.S. government indicted crypto exchange KuCoin. I believe they're an Asian crypto exchange, but they've indicted KuCoin and two of its founders for criminal charges, citing a multi-billion dollar criminal conspiracy. So something similar to what happened with Binance. Again, don't know what's going to happen with this, but what's interesting is this lawsuit is coming from the CFTC. So there's a governing body, the SEC. That's what deals with securities, basically, right? Then you have CFTC, which deals with commodities. And in this lawsuit, or in this indictment, I guess, the CFTC clearly pointed out that they are involved in this because Bitcoin, Ethereum, and they included Litecoin are commodities. And so that's why they are involved in this lawsuit. And not the SEC does not need to be involved in this because these are not securities, so it's not under their jurisdiction. So interesting that this is coming out. There's a bit of a turf war between these two. We want the CFTC to win because obviously we don't want any of these to be considered securities. Just a lot more legal stuff if it is. So this is, although it's bad news that an exchange in the crypto world is obviously going through more lawsuits, I think it's fine. We need to get these things all cleaned up and get them regulated anyway. So that's okay. But the bullish news from this is, hey, CFTC is calling Ethereum a commodity. So that, again, helps our chances. Again, I don't know where this is going to go. We don't know what's going to happen. We got to kind of just let it play out. But this is why I just think markets are going to be up in the air for the next little bit until we see where approvals go.
What's your bet, Kai? You think it's going to get approved on May 23rd?
Look, I have no expertise in this space, so I don't necessarily want to say anything. But yeah, I think it is going to get approved, to be honest.
Yeah,
I just don't see a reason why they wouldn't. And it's because it's the final date, May 23rd. To me, it makes sense that they will. I don't think they do the staking, which Fidelity just actually and a few others have applied for, but I don't see why they wouldn't. Other than you just never know what happens in the government and political world. And I think there was a lot to support Bitcoin. We know Gary Gensler likes Bitcoin, always has, and he just doesn't like Ethereum and everything else. So like maybe there's just some shadiness that goes on and that would be the reason it doesn't. But otherwise, I think it should.
The reason I think it gets approved is Occam's razor. The simplest answer is usually the answer. And I think we are all we're so excited about this. We're watching it almost too closely that we're expecting something to come out before that would indicate that is either getting approved or not getting approved. And because we're not getting any indication and nothing is coming out, everyone's being like almost freaking out and like throwing a fit about much ado about nothing, really, right? Like just because nothing is happening doesn't mean that it's not getting approved, but we're almost
no news could be good news. Yeah, agreed.
Like I think it does get approved and I think they're planning on that. I just don't think they don't want to leak, obviously, any indication of so. And I don't think they're procrastinating. I think they've just already made their decision. So they don't need to do all this, all these meetings and all the things they did last time for the BTC one because they've already done all that stuff. They get it now. So, but hey, look, I could be wrong. Wait and see. I'm certainly not an expert in SEC matters either. All right, let's go to the first story of the week. Kai, we got boring but exciting stuff happening in the on-chain crypto world. What's going on with a billion tokenized treasuries moving on-chain?
Yeah, so one of the big narratives of, I guess, the bear market, but also just of the last 2 years was tokenizing treasuries, real-world assets going on-chain. Tokenized treasuries was one of those because we've had high interest rates. And then obviously, BlackRock launched the fund Biddle, which we talked about last week. And that is, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, but that has actually taken off. So the combination of that plus some adoption from the other tokenized treasuries, we are now over $1 billion in tokenized treasuries. So that's a pretty big moment, I think. Super cool. You have Ryan Sean Adams here who just says, I expect $10 billion by the end of the year. And he says, every asset is a token, every bank is a chain, which I completely agree with. Everything's getting tokenized. Everything, every company that deals with finances, so think of banks, TradFi, think of fintech, they're all going to have their own layer 2 chain and they're all going to manage it in the same way that we'll talk about what Coinbase is doing or what BlackRock is doing. And so pretty massive. If we go to the next tab, Jay, a lot of this is coming from BlackRock, who launched at, I guess it was like $100 million, but they are up to $240 million in their fund now. They were up 400% in the last week in terms of assets moving into their fund and moving on chain. So BlackRock is an absolute beast, obviously. And of course, moving on chain, they're going to bring a ton of adoption there. If you scroll down, you can see there's a bunch of wallets that are buying this fund or I guess moving their investments into this fund. We don't know who any of them are except for one, which is Ondo Finance. They are the biggest holder of Build currently. They're a crypto protocol. But yeah, interesting to see the adoption. It's great to see that they're actually having success here. It came out yesterday, Larry Fink, CEO of BlackRock, was on the news and he said, Bitcoin ETF is their best performing ETF in history. So BlackRock has like 590 something ETFs and Bitcoin, which has only been 2 months, it's already the best performing ever. So that's nuts. And then also launching this fund on top of Ethereum has been massive. When they first launched it the first couple of days, it didn't have a lot of adoption. So people were like, oh, is this going to be a flop? No, this thing is just crushing it right now, which is exactly what we wanted to see. So this is just really cool. And again, as you said, Jay, it's kind of the boring thing for like mainstream. Mm-hmm. Most mainstream people don't really care about tokenized treasuries, but finance people care about this. And again, this is big, big, big money, right? This is $1 billion already. This is 200 and what, 40 million for BlackRock in a couple of weeks. This is just going to multiply and multiply. So this is what we want to see. We want to see the financial system move on chain. And BlackRock is literally leading the charge. BlackRock and who's the other one? Coinbase. Coinbase has also announced this week, Jay, that this was the head of product, I believe. So his name is Max Brenzberg on Twitter. He tweeted out a thread saying, going forward, Coinbase is going to be storing more corporate and customer USDC balances on Base. This enables us to manage and secure customer funds with lower fees and faster settlement times with no impact to the Coinbase user experience. So what's really cool about this doesn't matter for like the end user. What this matters for is Coinbase, the company itself that's managing all these funds, they have to pay so much in fees in the TradFi world. They also have to wait so long to get money from like one bank to the next bank. It can be very painful. And by moving on chain, it all happens instantly. You know, if they want to move $100 million, it costs, well, I guess about $1.05 currently on Base, which usually it should be a couple pennies, but we'll talk about what's going on with the Base fees in a second. But either way, a dollar is pretty damn cheap to move $100 million. So Coinbase is really, this is really cool because Coinbase is paving the way for all the other corporations in the world who don't currently know why they should be moving things on chain, right? Again, this isn't an exciting thing for Coinbase customers. They don't care. Nothing changes for them. It's not a mainstream thing, but corporations seeing this, and when this comes out in their earnings report where they talk about, oh, we've saved, you know, thousands, probably millions of dollars on fees by moving our assets on chain, this is going to be a really big deal. And I think they're going to sort of like pave the way for other corporations to do this. So you got BlackRock over here paving the way for the financial institutions saying, here's how you can move funds on chain. Then you've got Coinbase saying, here's how corporations can do things on chain. And so two incredible businesses that are the top of their industry, of their sector, sort of paving the way for the rest of the corporate world. I just think this is absolutely massive. But again, one of those things where it's boring to the rest of the world. If we think of last cycle, Jay, 2021, you had NFTs really lit it up. We had the culture that was moving on chain, right? You had musicians and artists and you had all the big brands launching on chain. So like it became so mainstream and everyone was talking about it. Everyone heard about it. But these things, no one cares. No one's talking about BlackRock's fund except for like our small group on crypto Twitter and on like TradFi Twitter or whatever. No one cares. No one cares about Coinbase moving their funds on chain, which is like, to me, is like a really good thing because this is just improving the fundamentals of crypto without letting anyone know about it. It's like sneakily, we are just like crushing it on chain right now, moving billions of dollars on chain and no one knows, and no one cares. And I actually like that a lot more than 2021 where everyone's talking about it. Everyone's launching something and trying to figure it out. Now, I think at some point this cycle, we will hit mainstream again. What that will be, I don't know. Maybe NFTs have their big comeback and we make it back into the zeitgeist. Or maybe it's meme coins. To be honest, that's my guess is what it is. I think meme coins continues to like become a bigger thing and makes its way into mainstream because it's just so simple. But the more that this stuff happens, the more bullish I am because these are like the underlying infrastructure stuff that we need for this thing that we want to like really happen, you know? The NFTs of like Nike and Adidas and Reddit and whatever, it's like, we could go without that. It's cool, but like doesn't really matter. But moving all of our financial instruments on chain, like that's a really big deal.
It's so true. The simple truth right now that I want to make sure that everybody is not missing is like, yes, finance is boring for most of the world. Like 99.9% of the world, finance is boring as fuck. But that is where all of our money is held, secured, traded, moved. So it impacts 100% of the world. I guess maybe not 100% because 3 billion people are still unbanked, but we're going to solve that too. And we're not going to talk about Facebook. We're going to solve that. We're also going to solve that. But here's the thing. Here's what's happening. Every asset is becoming a token and every bank is becoming a chain. That is currently happening before our eyes, and it's happening gradually. And then all of a sudden, it's going to happen suddenly. And that is where we are headed in this cycle. And that is so incredibly bullish for all of the major chains that the banks are going to build on top of. And we're going to talk about a few of those chains in a minute. But, you know, whether it's Base, which is on OP and Ethereum, or whether it's another L2, or whether it's on Solana, all of these chains are going to win as a result of just the financial system. Forget NFTs. Don't even worry about any of that stuff. Even if none of that other stuff happened on chain, we are going to get there just with the financial revolution that we are doing right now.
Right. And by when we say boring stuff, it's stable coins. This is so massive. If we can just do stable coins, if that's all crypto solves is stable coins, like moving US dollars on chain, it is a massive unlock for the world and huge for all of our banks who hold Ethereum, Sol, and whatever. If we can get institutions like BlackRock to tokenize on chain, this is super, super massive. And these are all the things that are happening. And I'll tell you why this is such a big deal. Jay, I'm in Brazil right now. I tried to buy a surfboard yesterday, okay? Ordering it from a company that is in Brazil. And so I went online to try to buy it. Can't buy it. Why? Well, because my credit card is a Canadian credit card and their system just doesn't work with it because they don't have the right input for a postal code. They have their own postal code. And my letters in my postal code, which is a zip code for those who are Americans, it doesn't work for that. And so I had to message them. I was like, hey, guys, this doesn't work. Your system isn't set up properly. Need something new. So they sent me this different payment code. That doesn't work. My banks won't allow it because it's a Brazilian company. I was like, guys, I just want to buy the surfboard. And I need it fast because I'm leaving the country. So they need to make it and like deliver it to me. So then they're like, okay, what else can we do? So then the guy goes, well, I got a US bank account personally. He's like, why don't you just wire transfer me the money? And I was like,
oh, God.
Okay, sure. Like, this is a risk, but whatever. Let's do it. So he sends me it. I go into my Wise account. They won't wire transfer to US bank accounts to Brazilians. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? So then I go to my bank. They'll do it, except it's a holiday tomorrow because it's freaking Easter. And so this won't actually go through until next week. And by then, it's too late for them to start creating my surfboard to get it to me in time. So I have to drive a half hour to the city to find a bank to like give them cash to put it in this guy's bank account, who will then go and pay for this thing for me, who's in a different city than me. And I was like, dude, will you please just take my crypto? Like, I could literally get you this money in 3 seconds for like a penny. And he's like, sorry, we can't do that. I was like, God, please just update the financial system. So this is the boring stuff is actually not that boring. It impacts everyone. Yep. So it would make my life a lot easier.
Hilarious story, first of all, that you want a surfboard that badly. Like, is everybody... who's a new listener to this, you just learned a lot about Kyle and how much he loves to surf in that story. But also, that's a great point of how, you know, it's easy to say, hey, this is boring and it only impacts banks and large institutions. But here's a small business that you are trying to make a purchase from that needs your money and cares about every single sale that they make. And they probably, I mean, they should have lost out on that sale. Let's be real. If it wasn't for the fact that you wanted the surfboard so badly, right? So we're not there yet, but we're going to get there. This is going to impact every single person, every single business in ways that people don't see yet. And it's happening. It's happening right now, guys. And yeah, that's just why we're so excited. Anyways, let's keep moving along. You know who else is excited right now is Coinbase and all the fees that they are getting from Base. Kai, what happened this past week on Base?
Yeah, so we touched on this last week a bit where Base, since they updated to 4.44, their fees went down like 10x, but their demand went up at least 5x. And so their fees were down to like pennies for a little bit. And then the next day, basically, it's now up over like a dollar. And that is continuing to happen. So one of the things they have announced that they're doing is they're going to increase the gas target 50%. So to 3.75. And then they did this yesterday. And so that has helped alleviate a little bit of these fees, but they're going to do it again, I believe, today as you listen. And so they're going to increase the gas target up to 5. And so this should help to alleviate. The reason you hold this back is like, it's not as secure the higher that the gas limit goes or gas target, but full as you decentralize more and more and more, it's okay to increase it more. But also Base is already centralized as is for now. It's working on it. But they need to do this because they need to make sure people can get their trades in. And this has become an issue because just so many people are using Base right now. But the good news of this in terms of how this looks to the rest of the world, or at least for Base and Coinbase, is just yesterday, Base reached a new high of $1.73 million in transaction fees that they made. Okay, now this used to be good, but not that great because a lot of it went to Ethereum just to cover the settlement costs. But out of that $1.73 million, they only had to pay Ethereum $4,000. So they made $1.72 million in one day off of their L2. So in the past 24 hours, just put this into other perspective, Base has made, or users of Base paid 666 ETH in fees, okay, in one day. So 566 ETH of that went to Coinbase, okay? 100 ETH went to Optimism, so OP Collective, good for OP holders, and 0.3 ETH went to Ethereum. So that's the sort of like flow of how this works on chain. And you got to remember, anything that's bullish for Base is one, bullish for Coin, which is the asset of Coinbase. It's bullish for OP, which is the asset of Optimism. It is bullish for ETH, although ETH didn't get that much, but that's okay. That'll continue to scale because remember, there's, I don't know, 100 L2s at this point all paying that. So pretty wild. And then Ryan Watkins just tweeted out and he says, imagine when Wall Street realizes Coinbase is printing $500 million in annualized revenue from an Ethereum rollup. He just says, Base may be the ultimate catalyst that gets enterprises building on chain. Now, these fees aren't going to stay this high, so I don't think they're going to make $500 million in annualized revenue. But the current projections, if you were to do that over the last week, because they've literally been printing over the last week, would look that way. But either way, they are going to be showing millions and millions and millions of dollars in profit from Base. And when that comes out in the next earnings report, it is going to be like no one is pricing that in, right? TradFi doesn't even understand that. They get the business model of the exchange and all that sort of. So like, and that's even super bullish. Once they go, holy shit, this Base thing is making this much money, it's going to be pretty wild. So I'm excited for whatever their next earnings report is. And then the last thing on the Base side is, so it took Base 203 days to reach $1 billion in total value locked, okay? It took another 23 days to get to $2 billion. And now it took 5 days to get to $3 billion. So when Jay says gradually and then suddenly, this is that. This is that right there. The value locked on, I mean, part of this, I guess, is Coinbase moving their assets on chain as well, as we just talked about. Yeah. But it is a lot of users moving over to Base as well. And I don't think this is going to stop. L2s and their TVL is just rocketing right now. And this is just huge for the entire L2 space. So a bunch of liquidity moving there, a bunch of fees happening on there. It's all good things in the L2 world. Well, not all. I guess Base's fees are kind of high, but that's okay. That'll get figured out.
That's a moment in time. And, you know, yeah. Sorry to the users. It's honestly, it's like when we were all early to the internet. Remember how much the internet cost to get on in the beginning and how slow and painful it was? But we still used it early days because it was better than the old forms of getting information and communication. And
this is one of the pirate music from Napster.
Yeah, that's right. I need to get my jams, man. Pump up the jams. Eric Brids, let's go. Okay, also happening this past week, Avalanche and Chainlink released a case study that they did. And so I want to point this out because this was done with Australian New Zealand Bank, which is the biggest bank in Australia and New Zealand, ANZ, hold over $1 trillion in assets, and they are experimenting on chain. And so we talk about Base being on chain. Well, yeah, of course, Coinbase is a crypto native company. That's their whole objective. But the TradFi world is also bringing their assets on chain. And not just the more forward-thinking TradFi companies, also the OG super old banks like ANZ, Citigroup, JP Morgan. And so in this case study, what they did was they showed that you can move money in an on-chain way that is better than the TradFi way. And if you know, right now the way we move money is through the SWIFT network. And SWIFT also sees the opportunity in blockchain. This past summer, they released a report where they said that 97% of institutional investors believe that tokenization will revolutionize asset management and be a positive force in the industry, not least because of its potential to increase efficiency, reduce costs, and by enabling fractional ownership, open up opportunities to more investors. So through this partnership, Avalanche, Chainlink, and ANZ, what they did was they showed that ANZ customers could use Chainlink's CCIP, which is their interoperability protocol, to securely transfer an ANZ-issued stablecoin cross-chain from Avalanche to Ethereum in order to purchase a nature-based asset that was held in the form of an NFT. Now, that's a big mouthful of a lot of buzzwords that I just threw in there. But the point is, here's what the existing problem is. Right now, when we want to move money, we have to move it between banks. In order to do that, you need a bank interoperability protocol. That's SWIFT. Okay. Well, now, in order to move money on chain, we're also going to need an interoperability protocol because we have many chains. Each bank, as I said before, is going to have its own chain in the future. A lot of large enterprises are going to have their own chain. We already talked months ago about Flipkart, one of the largest e-commerce companies in India, has started its own chain. And so when we have all these chains, we are going to have stable coins on all these various chains. We're going to have assets on all these various chains. And think about right now how difficult it is to buy something in a stable coin on one chain. If you want to then buy it from another chain, well, you got to bridge that stable coin across, super complex. But CCIP, Chainlink's cross-chain interoperability protocol, makes this super simple for users. And Australia New Zealand Banking Group showed how easy this was in this case study, which produced tremendous results that is super bullish for all of us to show that, hey, the banks are going to benefit from moving on chain. And it's not only better for the banks because it's going to be faster, it's going to reduce fees, which can allow them to make more money. And again, because they control their own chains, they're going to make fees as well. Don't worry, they're not missing out on this party. But also, it's going to be better for the users because just think about right now how fucking annoying it is, as Kyle said earlier, to buy something in a foreign country with a credit card from a different country. It's horrible. It's awful. Well, blockchain is going to fix all of this. So shout out to Avalanche and Chainlink for showing off how that is possible. Next up, let's get to a fun story this week, Kai. Let's talk about the Munchables. I'm not talking about what you get after you might maybe smoke a doobie and you get the munchies. I'm talking about a collection that is on Blast. Blast is getting a lot of hype right now, and for good reason. Really, I'm really bullish and excited about Blast. But somebody launched basically a game on Blast where the more ETH you stake in this game, you grow your Munchable. If you're watching this on YouTube, you'll see I've got an image up on screen of these little Munchables. They're like AI little like creatures. And basically, you put your ETH into a contract, and then by doing so, your Munchable improves and grows, and you get more rewards, more Blast points. And so lots of people were involved in this game, getting excited. And the Munchables team was growing so fast that they needed to hire more devs. So they hired a dev online from North Korea. And great, this dev is working. As they build more trust with this dev, they gave this dev access to their multi-sig wallet, which controlled all of their assets that were locked in this contract, which got up to be almost $100 million. And then what do you think happened next? That dev rugged the entire team. He took $62 million out of the contract and basically was like, peace out. I got $62 million. Now, you might think that's where the story ends, but no, it doesn't end there. What happened next was a lot of people on crypto Twitter said, hey, look, Blast is still a centralized chain. They still have full control of the bridge and the contract that this money, this $62 million, would be locked in. So, hey, everybody says, you know what? Blast should just roll back the chain and give the $62 million back to the users, and boom, we're over with. But obviously, that's a big decision
that would lead to a question of, are they leading towards decentralization or are they centralized? And who takes the hit here, right? Blast is new. Obviously, they're concerned about their users. So there was a debate about this. Ryan Selkis from Asari got in this debate. He said, hey, if North Korea gets away with another 62 million, we're done with crypto in the US. And that's a little bit of an extravagant statement. I'm not sure I fully agree with that, but he's not far off. Like, we're concerned. So he says, hey, Blast, just deal with this for us. We can't handle this anymore. And then later on the same day, because everything happens so fast in crypto, Pac-Man, the founder of Blur and Blast, came out and he said, hey, the money has been secured. We've got it back. I'm not exactly sure how they got it back or how they happened, because there's two things he said in his message. First, he said it took an incredible lift in the background. And then he also said, but I'm grateful the ex-Munchables dev opted to return all the funds in the end without any ransom required. So whatever happened, the dev clearly decided to return the money. Maybe there was pressure from somebody. I'm honestly not sure. But in whatever way, this whole exploit basically was nothing in the end. They got the money back and we all get to keep on moving and putting money into Munchables for some reason, because
I mean, I wouldn't be doing that, but I mean, good news for Blast. Like, that sucked for sure. Still early days of its mainnet, so to have to go through that is not great. By the way, just to clarify, you said they just hired some dev and he's from North Korea. I don't think they knew that they were doing this at the time. Although there's also the speculation of, like, there was four hires and people think it was like all the same guy, because you can see on chain of the wallets that it looked like maybe they were all the same person pretending to be one. Like, we don't really know the full scoop of what's going on here, which is also why Jay said, like, how did they just get the money back without any ransom? Like, this doesn't really make any sense. They didn't roll back the chain, and don't even know if Blast Team was ever thinking about doing that. That would obviously not be great. Just, you know, the community was saying that they could do that and it's not that big of a deal potentially because they're so new, but I don't know what happened there. Very, very odd. I am super bullish on Blast. I think what they're building is really, really cool. And Pac-Man is an absolute legend. And so I would assume, and it's never good to assume in this industry because you never know what's happening, that they didn't do anything like shady in the background. But something tells me they had to have paid something to get this money back. It doesn't really make sense. So I don't know. I'm sure something will come out probably by the time we release this podcast. So we're probably old news at this point.
Okay, let's go from Munchables to meme coin mania. That is this week. Where's the meme coin mania? It's over on Base. Last week it was on Solana. The week before it was Toiler Swolft, Joe Biden, and Trump. It's never ending. I'll tell you, whoever the meme coin of the week is, they're probably wearing a hat, because that is all that is required these days to be a popping off meme coin. Actually, not wearing a hat. Okay, this week's big meme coin is Gozali. Okay, who the heck is Gozali? So Gozali is this kid from Indonesia who about 6 years ago started taking a selfie every day. And he took those selfies and then he uploaded them as NFTs every single day. And so he had a different selfie every day. And he's just a, you know, young, at this point, he was an 18-year-old Indonesian kid. These are very basic selfies, nothing special about them. He sold them for $3. His NFT collection ended up, for whatever reason, getting flying off the charts. And this is back a few years ago. He got over $1 million that he raised from selling these NFTs. And he said things like, this is great. He said, you can do anything, like flipping or whatever, but please don't abuse my photos or my parents will be very disappointed in me. I believe in you guys, so please take care of my photos. So we've got these NFTs, okay? We got all these Gozali photos on chain. And then he stopped doing the daily selfies maybe about 6 months ago, and he kind of disappeared off of Twitter for a bit. And then all of a sudden, he came back this week, and he said, I'm launching part two of Gozali every day, and guess what? It's not an NFT anymore. What do you think it is now? It's a meme coin.
Meme coin,
of course. So, and how did he do the launch of the meme coin? Well, he says, I've got a pre-sale open, okay? Send ETH to this wallet, a minimum of 0.05, a max of 2 ETH, at a cap of 400 ETH, and you will get a opportunity to get involved in this meme coin before I launch it.
And so what do you think happened here, Kai? Well, a whole bunch of people fed this guy like hundreds of ETH. He got so much money. So this is his wallet right now. It's on Base. I'm looking at it. I got it up on screen here. His balance is $1.45 million in ETH. He's got just over 400 ETH. This wallet did get up to like over $3 million because so many people sent him ETH. And he actually refunded. He stayed true to his word that he was only going to do 400 cap. So he refunded a whole bunch of it. And now, basically, this guy is, if you go to his Twitter, he is teasing that the token, the meme coin, will be launched soon. Look, I wouldn't suggest that anybody go invest in Ghazali meme coin, but this is what's happening right now with meme coins. It is so easy to launch a meme coin. It takes you literally no time. All you need is some sort of a cultural brand, which Ghazali has because of his everyday NFTs. People love this guy, or dogs have it, or anything with a hat has it. I'm sure Ghazali with hat will come next. And a lot of people are just, for no reason, sending money to these wallet addresses. Like, it's just degen behavior to the max.
It is a wild, wild time out there. Jay, let's jump on over to the Super Intelligence Alliance from one narrative to the next. We go from meme coins over to AI. And this is actually a fairly big move. So there's three AI crypto tokens, or companies, let's call it, that are have announced that they are merging together. This is Fetch AI, Singularity, and Ocean Protocol. And they are merging together basically to become the biggest AI crypto company in the space. And really, it was not just to become the biggest AI crypto company, it is to become a massive AI company in general that can try to compete with the rest. And so this makes them the largest decentralized AI company, although I don't know if they're actually all fully decentralized or not, but it's quite interesting. So Fetch AI has basically a protocol for like autonomous AI agents that use blockchain infrastructure. And so they're pretty big. They've been doing quite well. We've talked about them in one of our pro reports before. Then you have Singularity, which is like a research and development for AI company. And they have Ocean Protocol, which is basically like a marketplace for data in general, but they've really hit the AI narrative as well. And so they're a place where you can basically sell your data and others can come and buy it and they can use it to train like their LLMs and stuff like that. So they have kind of three different branches here while they're all merging together. And what's interesting is in the crypto world, the way that this works is instead of all the difficulty in terms of getting a bunch of lawyers, and we understand mergers because we just had one, obviously, with Web3 Academy Milk Road, it is an absolute shit show. And you have to get a million accountants and a million, you know, lawyers all involved. Now, I'm sure they still need this actually for this tokens, but the way that it works is the three tokens that exist today for Fetch, Singularity, and Ocean, they're all merging into one token called ASI. And how this works for the end user is basically they will just, once this is approved by their communities, which will start, I think, April 2nd, basically you just will have a feature to swap on the site where you can just swap your, let's say your FET, which is the Fetch token, one for one into the ASI token. And what's cool is the combined value of these three is something like $7.8 billion market cap this will turn to, I believe. Where's the number here? I'm trying to look for it. Current price is around $7.8 billion. So it'll be easily the biggest AI token in the space. So, I mean, pretty cool. This happens a lot in bull markets, so this is expected. You'll see a bunch of these probably happen throughout the cycle. Whether it's a good thing, bad thing, honestly, don't really know. A lot of the AI crypto narrative is a little bit overblown already, and we're still early in the cycle. But what's interesting is as we did our report, we were looking at what are some of the more legit AI crypto tokens or companies, I guess, and Fetch and Ocean were both part of it. So two solid ones. I don't know much about Singularity, to be honest. The other two, as we were doing our research, looked pretty legit. We're looking to do a deep dive on more AI crypto tokens. So maybe we'll do it on this new ASI token that comes out. But anyway, pretty cool to see. And will this be bullish for the token or not? Honestly, have no idea. Let's see what happens here. But pretty cool to see three big companies all kind of come together. To be fair, though, it's still very small compared to like TradFi AI companies like OpenAI. So like this isn't that big of a deal in the AI world, but they're trying to make it a big deal to take wind of this crypto AI narrative.
It's interesting how much of a hype cycle crypto AI narrative is right now. But at the same time, it's also kind of not, because there is, within that hype cycle, there is some very legit tech being built that change the world. It's so much of a hype cycle. It's tough to find which ones those are. And that's exactly why you need to subscribe to Milk Road Pro, because we're going to tell you which ones you need to keep your eye on and watch out for.
Let's jump to Airdrop 'em Like It's Hot, our segment every week where we talk about the airdrops that we are following. Kai, first up here, we've got Athena Labs. What's going on?
So Athena has launched, or will be launching, 750 million ENA tokens on April 2nd. This is their big airdrop. We haven't really covered Athena that much. It is a stablecoin protocol where they've created a stablecoin called USDE. They're not calling it a stablecoin, they're calling it a synthetic dollar. Part of the reason why is, I mean, it's quite complex, but also just chilling or talking about stablecoins is just a scary world since Terra Luna. So I don't think it's one we necessarily wanted to hype up too much, though. I think what they're doing is really cool. It's obviously experimental, but Arthur Hayes, who's been in this space for a long time, we've talked about a bit, he's backing it, as well as some other big names. Basically, it's a stablecoin that is backed by ETH. The problem is, of course, ETH goes up and down, and so it's not over-collateralized like what MakerDAO does with DAI. The problem is, what happens when ETH goes too low? So what they do is that they have this mechanism where they're always shorting ETH at the same time. And so like by shorting ETH, if it ever goes down, it evens it out. And so they have the system that essentially works, should be perfectly, and they never need to be over-collateralized. It's pretty interesting. It's pretty cool, and it's working quite well. It's become really, really big. I think they're in the billions of dollars already in terms of their like value locked into it. But it's still just, it's pretty early days, and you never know what's going to happen. But anyway, they are launching their governance token. So congrats to anyone who used that. And sorry that we did not promote it. We want to make sure we're not promoting things that are going to go to zero like Terra Luna. So anyway, that's all good. Now, interestingly, on the airdrop side of things, in terms of points, there's sort of like two ways that people have been doing this. Obviously, the points thing has been the big narrative recently. Optimism was one of the earlier ones in this where they do something called retro active funding, where instead of giving you points to do things and then airdrop you based off those points, you just do things and they'll just, you know, at some point just maybe airdrop you stuff, but you don't really know. They were doing this before points existed. So probably they wish they were doing points. They're like the next thing they're doing, because they just announced a new retro funding, which is basically they're giving 850 million OP tokens, but they're actually incentivizing people. So they've bucketed it into sort of four categories. If you go to the next tweet below, Jay, you can see they're doing a drop in May for on-chain builders, one in August for the people building on the OP stack, one for in August for people working around governance, and one for dev tooling, which is in October. So they're sort of giving more direction on who will be rewarded tokens. It's still not a point system, but they are trying to incentivize certain individuals. And so, hey, if you go work on these things, you can apply. And if you get accepted, you will get the tokens. That's how they do it. Different from anyone can go and do this. It's sort of open concept. Just go and get your points and you'll get tokens. So Optimus is doing that. If you're building on the OP stack, make sure you go and get those. It's free money, and they want to give this because they want to, basically a grant, right? To get people to build on chain. So if you're doing that, you need some funding, go make sure you check this out. You can find it on the Optimism Twitter feed.
One more airdrop to speak about. We've been talking about MarginFi for a while, and their points program has been going on what some would consider for too long. And people are a little bit fed up saying, hey, look, I've been farming. I've been involved in your ecosystem. Give me my airdrop already. And so somebody within their ecosystem was just fed up and done waiting. So they created their own token called Margin, M-R-G-N, and airdropped it to MarginFi point owners, basically kind of like preempting the MarginFi team and their airdrop and just making like a new token and saying, hey, I'm going to make this the token. So that happened. And obviously a lot of MarginFi point holders were like, we're excited. They got this airdrop. But then here's what's interesting. The same time, like literally, I don't know if it was the same day or the next day, MarginFi came out and said, hey, we saw the first team reward loyal MarginFi point earners with an airdrop. They said, it's just getting started. Now we're going to allow others to do this through a simple UI that we're building. So they announced it's called Hamptor. And Hamptor is basically an interface that allows anybody to get your token in front of 400,000 MarginFi users. So basically what you could do is you could, you know, launch a meme coin and airdrop it
to MarginFi users. You could launch a governance token, same thing. You could have an NFT that you want to whitelist. You could whitelist it to MarginFi, or they call them Margin Mamas. So very interesting to see the MarginFi team sort of jump on top of this random person that got this token.
It's smart. It's basically an API to their points, right? You can always see who's using MarginFi, but you can't see who's highest ranked in the points because the points is not on chain. So they basically just create an interface that has an API. So you can then see it, and then you can attach that to a wallet, and you can now launch NFTs or tokens or whatever to the points people, which is cool because likely those who are highest in points are probably going to end up getting the most tokens. Also means they're probably, have more assets than the lower points ones. They're more committed. So kind of like how we've talked about people are airdropping to NFT holders. Mm-hmm. Now there's this, maybe is this the new meta of instead of dropping to those who hold more assets, those who have more points. Points are the meta. So anyway, we'll see what happens there if others follow suit. It is quite interesting. It's a way to reward your users before you even reward them, It's actually quite interesting. Now I'm top 5,000 in MarginFi points, just so you're all aware on the leaderboard. I didn't get that token though. So I don't know, Margin or whoever launched that. What the heck, man? I didn't get that. So anyway, if someone wants to use this interface, look for somewhere around the number of 5,000. That's me.
Okay, let's go to our final segment of every roll-up. We do agree, disagree, where we read out tweets and we talk about whether we agree or disagree. And sometimes we might need to explain them. First up, from Ki Young Yu, he says, this cycle is different. Institutional funds of $86 billion entered the Bitcoin market in the past 6 months. And then he's got a chart which shows the Bitcoin ETFs and what has happened as a result of the ETFs. And basically, it shows that it's just gone absolutely parabolic from close to maybe $10 billion only a few months ago, basically early January, to $96 billion in just a few months as a result of BlackRock and the ETFs.
Yeah, I mean, I agree the cycle is different. There's something different about the having this ETF. We just never had this much ability for people to buy, right, in such an easy way, in tax-free ways, et cetera. So something is definitely different, though the $86 billion, or you said 96, because it's different from his chart and his tweet. I don't know why. It's a little bit misleading. He's saying that all this is due to institutions, but not everyone buying the ETFs is institutions. We don't know who's buying the ETFs. It could be institutions, and I'm sure some of it is, but also a lot of it is probably just normal crypto natives who are now taking advantage of the ETFs in a different form. And it's also probably retail who's coming in as well. So it's not necessarily actually $86 billion coming in just because he has it showing BlackRock. So it looks like BlackRock is buying this much Bitcoin. It's not. We're just using BlackRock's ETF to buy, but we don't know who is all buying that. So it's different, but every cycle is different in some way, but I think it all always rhymes. So I don't think it's going to be that different.
All right, next up, we have James Van Stratton. He says, Bitcoin will experience another significant drawdown of 70% or less. It will just occur from magnitudes higher than where we are now.
So I agree that we will have another massive pullback, probably around the lines of 70%. And for context, for those who weren't in previous cycles, in the first two cycles, we went down 86% and 84% from the highs. And then the last cycle, we were somewhere around 78%. And so probably this cycle, yes, we will have another big drawdown somewhere between, 50 and 70%. Although maybe it's different with the ETFs, right? There's more, bigger funds that are buying. So maybe we don't have that. Although what he says is it'll occur from a magnitude higher. That an order of magnitude would be adding another zero. We're currently at 70,000, which would mean 700,000 is the top. That's not happening. I don't think there's a chance in hell that we hit 700,000 this cycle. I think that's just moon boys being moon boys. I would imagine this guy's a big Bitcoiner. I don't think we hit those levels. We definitely go much higher than where we are now, but I don't think we're going orders of magnitude higher. That would be a bit wild.
Yeah, I agree. I think we are definitely going higher, and we are definitely going to see a drawback. And we see a drawback of 15% last week alone. I don't know if we'll get to 70%, but I think somewhere in that range of 50 to 70% is likely to happen again in the future. Okay, next up, Zeneca says, God, I am finding it hard to get back into the swing of things. leave for a week and miss a decade worth of things. That said, literally sitting on my hands and doing nothing is not the worst strategy at this point in the cycle. Numbers still just keeps going up.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. If you have a good strategy and you're holding strong assets, like, this isn't the time to really be trading around like crazy. And I say that because there's always phases of these cycles. The first one is always Bitcoin dominance goes up. It's like you want to be holding Bitcoin. Its risk-adjusted return is just so large that it doesn't make sense to really hold anything else. You can still hold some shit coins and maybe it'll go up as much. But like when Bitcoin's going up from, you know, 15K last year, now it's at 70K, like this is a 4 or 5X. Like, you know, it's hard to get that in something else. So we're still in that phase though. Like Bitcoin's not going to 5X from here probably, but you have Ethereum and Solana, the other two big majors that are still outperforming most of the market. Even Bitcoin's still outperforming most of the market, to be honest. And it's crazy to me to not be just like holding most of your portfolio in those, because that risk-adjusted return is just so massive. And when I go back to the very first tweet I showed the Market Watch of like, this is like a generational opportunity, don't mid-curve this. Like, it's really true. And it's not about just don't mid-curve it. It's also, don't go too far down the risk curve and not actually capitalize on this. Like, if you are holding a bunch of meme coins instead of just holding the majors, couldn't be a dumber idea right now. Put it straight, well, just like that.
And on that note, this isn't really a agree, disagree, but I had to bring this up. You teed this up well. This is another tweet, and this came from Confessions, said, I put 5K into WIF, sold for 7K thinking I was a genius. My bag would be worth 12 million plus right now. I lost over 100,000 trying to find the next WIF. I am ruined.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening to a professional trader on the podcast the other day, and he's been in the space for forever. And he's like, yeah, I'm in a bunch of meme coins, of course. But he's like, basically what he said is, one, I'm in them because I get early access to them all, right? And so I own a large supply of them. And he's like, I don't want to sell them though, because I know the people that launched them. And there's a bunch of us in there. So if one of them sells, we just like dump the market and we're kind of screw everyone else. So I end up, he's like, he's in so many. He goes, I pretty much 99.9% of the time, I ride it up to its highs and then ride it back down to lows to zero. He's like, because I just can't sell, or I don't know when to sell. It's so hard to time these things. It's so ridiculous.
That's the number one rule in meme coins. It's millions or zero. So if you want to play, that's the price to play. Okay, next up, Ryan Sean Adams says, I'm going to say something that's true in crypto that I wish wasn't the case and have been slow to admit. Narrative market fit is more important than product market fit.
Yeah, I agree. Ryan has been slow to admit this one, but this one is quite obvious. In a bull market, this is true in a bull market. In a bear market, no. And at some point, this is going to be less true, because when the market's small, narratives can just like run everything. And also the market is very immature, let's call it, because there's a lot of people just like trading in their mom's basements or their parents' basements. But as institutions come in, I think this becomes less true. And I don't know if that's in this cycle or next cycle or whatever, but definitely narratives will swing things. Although to be fair, narratives also swing things in like the normal TradFi stock market as well, just probably to a lesser extent than what we get in crypto.
Okay, next up, Tang Yan says, every chain that eventually makes it into the big leagues has to go through a trial by fire, an existential crisis, and prove that it can come out of it still running strong. Well, Blast got its crisis early.
I would disagree with it. I don't think this was an existential crisis for Blast. This had nothing to do with Blast. It was just an app building on top of Blast. This is expected more than anything. All chains have had these exploits. So like, this was definitely not an existential crisis for them. Sucked for the devs and the users. I get that. But again, small amount of users, if you're thinking long-term about this, of what Blast is like really trying to build. So like, I don't think this was that big of a deal for them. Of course, they are very happy that it got figured out. But like, the thing with Munchables or whatever they're called, like, I don't think that's it. Like, an existential crisis is like FTX collapsing and Solana, or, you know, a lot of Solana's like protocols had their treasuries on FTX. And so like, wait, that's an existential crisis. And also, like, most of the tokens were held by FTX, so that's a big problem. ETH, when they had the DAO that was hacked, early days ETH, where in Ethereum, it was something like 40 or 30-something percent of the entire ETH supply was hacked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's an existential crisis. Blast, this was nothing. $16 million was not a big deal, and it wasn't their money. It was money on an app that's on there, so I disagree.
Okay, last one. Deebs DeFi says, those friends that called you lucky 2 weeks ago are the same ones that will call you lucky when BTC hits 100K this year. Have conviction. It's what got you this far.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Everyone is a little bit lucky to like hear about this, you know, the friend that told them about it, or I don't know, maybe they came across some video or whatever, like probably a little bit of luck in that. But if you actually stuck around and continued to learn, and especially if you stuck around like in 2022, 2023 through all the craziness, or if you go back to the previous cycle of 2018 when everyone was leaving, if you stuck around, that shit's not lucky. That's hard, right? If you were putting in the work when everyone else was telling you this stuff is stupid or a scam, it's not lucky at all. That is hard work, and not many people can do that. So you should definitely be proud of that, and don't let anyone call you lucky.
And conviction comes from hard work.
Learning.
It comes from, yeah, you know, 100%. Reading newsletters, listening to podcasts, doing your research, and then you develop conviction over time. I think what he's saying, which is a good point, or what they are saying, I don't know if it's he or her, is in moments like this, don't lose your conviction. Don't stray from your plan is the main thing. Now is when there is so much hype happening in so many other things that you can say, oh my gosh, I should pull some money out of my Bitcoin and move it into, or I should pull some money out of my ETH is probably more what you're thinking right now, because ETH is not keeping up with Bitcoin or Solana currently. And oh, I'm going to go move it into some meme coins and try some other stuff. That's where your conviction will lead you wrong, because you got
to say you need to be lucky.
Plan. Yeah. You got to, then you got to get super lucky. Yeah. 100%. Well, Kai, that's a wrap. Our first roll up as Milk Road Radio. Super excited to be here with you all. Thank you so much for listening in to us. We'll be coming at you every week, every Friday with the roll up. We look forward to many exciting weeks ahead. As we said at the beginning, there is an opportunity to subscribe to Milk Road Pro for the next week only at a 33% lifetime discount. So don't miss out on that. Get that subscription so you got the crypto analysis, the macro analysis, the TA, the on-chain analysis that you need to feel good about your investments through this bull cycle. Have a great day, everybody. Have a fantastic weekend. Touch some grass. We'll see you guys next week. Thank you for listening to Milk Road Radio, the easiest path to get smarter about crypto. If you like this episode, share it and hit subscribe or follow so you don't miss out on the next one. There's also a link in the description to our free 5-minute daily newsletter where we simplify crypto for you while making you laugh. And if you're willing to step up your crypto investing game, then we'll leave a link to Milk Road Pro as well, your number one resource to help you invest successfully in crypto. One final note, this podcast is for educational purposes only, and nothing we say is financial advice. Crypto is risky, so you should never invest more than you're willing to lose. Thank you, friends, and we'll see you in the next one.